This is William Del Pilar, your conservative Latino, and welcome to Fired Up, your source for Friday night conservative talk. Before I bring my guests on, a few things. Well, first of all, we've got a hell of a show for you tonight. We are going to sit there and talk about Tulsi Gabbard and her accusations of Obama with 2016 intel manipulation. I'm being kind when I say accusations. She pretty much has the receipt. She's like William Del Pilar, me. I bring the receipts to the table, and some of this stuff is shocking, especially when you look at where this information. I mean, did you guys know that the golden showers came from guys having beers and just having jests? Most of this information was just thrown at a wall. Hey, we're going to use that, because it didn't stick. And the one piece of information from an actual human source said, yeah, Putin doesn't care who wins. That was not used. Go figure. And then we're going to talk a little bit about the Epstein case that's resurfacing. Specifically, the courts came back and said, no, sir, you cannot have any names. And then there is a current battle between the New Jersey U.S. attorney. The New Jersey judges versus the DOJ and the U.S. attorney there, Alina Haba. And the battle that's been brewing there. We're going to have a few hot takes tonight. We're going to briefly talk about some of Trump's victories, the Democrat extremism, Trump's admin's historic settlement with Columbia and Harvard's next. And then we're going to talk about the landmark U.S.-Japan trade. And then finally, we're not going to have a little fun, but we've got to mention this. Make Macron versus Candace Owens. And which way does Mrs. Macron swing? But before I get going, so I heard a podcast the other day, and it just drove me nuts because they just casually threw out there, yeah, those Republicans, I was once a Republican, you know, they're the party of racism and bigotry. And I'm like thinking, it just burned me up because I'm sick of that. I am sick and tired of that. First of all, the Republican Party was the last and only third party in modern history. Well, I don't know if 1860 was modern time, but in history to actually succeed. And we came out of the Whig Party, and the goal was to abolish slavery. 500,000 deaths later of Anglos people to defend white America here, slavery was abolished. The Republican leadership passed the 13th, 14th, and 15th Amendments. We were the ones pushing for the Civil Rights Act of 1964. And that big lie of the Dixiecrats becoming Republicans, I actually researched that, people. Like I said, you got to bring the receipts. And I want to say there were like three of the 300-some-odd Democrats that became Republicans. And one of them converted and found God. We've had diverse Republican leaders, including Tim Scott, Nikki Haley, and Marco Rubio, in terms of representing our party. I am Latino. I don't look it. And you're right. I admit that. I do. My mother's is, you look at her and you say, hey, is she Korean? You look at my grandmother and go, hey, is she Afro-Caribbean? You know, you look at my cousins. They're that beautiful caramel color. They call me Blanquito. And that's why I got in this fight, because we're diverse. I have seen my mom mistreated by those who thought they were superior to her and by those who just wanted to help her but thought they were smarter than her, meaning they truly wanted to help, but they viewed her as this dumb little Latina woman who could barely speak English. They hated her at work at the factory she worked because she had a base. They all had a baseline they had to produce, and then after that, it was all bonus. She was trying to get our family out of poverty in Panama, so she overproduced. The whites, the blacks, and the Asians at the factory all hated her because she made them all look bad. Her country redneck white supervisor said, don't worry about it, Clemencia. They're just jealous. They hated her. You know, so she saw from all fronts. The Republican Party has been advocates for merit-based policies over racial preferences. We have been opposed to all forms of discrimination, including reverse racism.
But William, it's President Trump. Remember the Central Park Five?
Yes, I do remember that. I was a small kid. And you know what you don't remember, what you conveniently forget? That the black DA thought they were guilty too. That every freaking New Yorker thought they were guilty too, including Puerto Ricans, hardworking Puerto Ricans. Everybody thought they were guilty. But y'all be acting like Trump was the only New Yorker in its lifetime to have thought those guys were guilty. Trump created opportunity zones to invest in underserved communities. He signed the First Step Act for criminal justice reform. And in fact, today's pardon czar is a woman who happens to be black who was serving life in jail for weed. He secured permanent funding for historically black colleges and universities. Achieved record low unemployment rates for not only blacks and Hispanics, but Indians, Native Americans, whites, every freaking American. The working class actually saw their wages go up. But all these people who accuse Trump, you know what they're saying? Oh, terrorist ban. Those terrorists helped reinvigorate America during his first term. Democrats, Joe Biden, terror ban. Blah, blah, blah. And they kept the terrorists. They so bad why they do that. He reduced poverty rates to historic lows for black and Hispanic Americans. And let me go back to talking about the wages going up. That meant low-income people, their money went farther. They could buy more stuff. They could actually sit there and afford to upgrade, get better things in their lives, save money. Because I guarantee you, hardworking blacks and Latinos and hardworking anybody of whatever culture, the smart parents know they are going to sacrifice their lives for their kids. That's just how it is. It's sad but true. Trump also increased home ownership and median income for black and Hispanic Americans. Promoted second chance hiring for former inmates. Boosted wage growth and household wealth for Hispanic Americans. Democrats, Jasmine Crockett, she says my people should be made sure to be brought here to be picking strawberries. To be wiping their baby butts. To be cleaning our toilets. Bishop Boudet, Mr. Episcopalian, who lives in a mansion. That's all we're good for in her eyes. Nancy Pelosi stated Florida needs migrants to pick the crops. Debbie Wasserman Schultz said, we need illegal immigrants to pick our crops and clean our toilets. Oh, Pramila Jayapal, she argued against deportations by asking people to, quote, think about who picked the food on their tables. You notice a freaking trend here? Gotta watch my mouth. Jerry Nadler, he of mammoth size, now a dementia-riddled fool who can barely walk. He noted vegetables would, quote, rot in the ground, unquote, without immigrants picking them. What are you saying? Us Latinos, that's all we're good for. You know, it reminds me of Kathy Hochul when she said, we got to have computers in the ghettos there, because they don't know what it is. Oh, and then I'm not going to show it, but that wonderful video of the black man acting like a gorilla looking at a computer. He did that to mock her. And it was successful. Adam Schiff question, quote, who's going to work the farms, unquote. I mean, it's and the Libertarian Party, hey, they're one of the worst. All I have to do is say Jeremy Kaufman offered to send a black Democrat to Africa, kind of Uyghur genocide fake. The LPNH account claimed libertarians suffer more oppression than black people and then mocked with Libertarian Lives Matter. Responded to Nina Turner calling for free insulin by saying, pick crops for free. Jeremy Kaufman posted bigot content, including racial pseudoscience. Hell, even one of the faces of the Libertarian Party, Dave Smith, acknowledged racial differences in intelligence as scientific fact in a podcast with white supremacist Stephen Molyneux. Jeff Dyke, Deist, argued that blood and soil still matter to people, invoking a phrase with Nazi origins. Everybody throws in Nazi this, Nazi that. But you see where we're going? Angela McArdle, the Libertarian Party chair, defended inviting an anti-Semite by saying asking the Jews run Hollywood doesn't make someone anti-Semite. And Michael Rechtenwald, the Mises Caucus, tweeted, America isn't in debt to black people. If it's anything, it's the other way around on MLK Day. Talk about being tone deaf. And with the Libertarians, I'll end it with the Ron Paul newsletter. So before y'all sit there and condemn us, look in your freaking mirror, Look in your face. Look in your eyes. Because what you're accusing us of, I can sit there and say with the receipts to prove it's you, and stop projecting. Now, everything I said, throw it out the freaking window, because that's my political talk. When somebody wants to go political, I will destroy you with those receipts. But why do I say throw it out the window? Because there's racism everywhere in this world. There's racism in the Democrat Party, in the Libertarian Party, and yes, in the Republican Party. There's bigots. What we have to do is defeat those people. They're the outliers. The greatest people I have worked with have come from every color. And you know why? I was in the military. I have a military background. You go into a military neighborhood and you will see the diversity like nowhere else. But if you want to get political, I will destroy you with receipts. This nonsense of spewing Trump is racist without any facts to back it up. And then when somebody says, well, what was he racist at? Oh, you support racism? Because you have no receipts. Just hate. And hopefully I haven't run my guests off. Let me bring them both on. Let me start out with the G-Man. And let me bring our – I love bragging this guy up because I never met a Rhodes Scholar until I met this guy. I never met a bigwig in the California Republican Party because I'm a grunt and I'm a proud grunt. And I love my status as being a grunt. So I love pumping this guy up, and he's turning out to be just a very – actual, everyday, easygoing guy. You wouldn't think how successful he is. But he is who I call our Rhodes Scholar, our legal heavyweight, Mr. Randy Burholtz.
Hey, buddy. How's it going?
So, guys, I apologize, but that's just been bugging me all since I saw that podcast.
Well, can I add one thing?
Oh, you
forgot one person. Our what many hope to be the next president of the United States, Governor Gavin Newsom. Oh. And he recently basically said ICE is scaring the children in the pot fields, which I interpret that as who will pick the pot?
That's
the kids.
Yeah.
He wants the kids to pick the pot. And I'm talking about not our kids, but illegal immigrant kids coming across the border. And, I mean, we got to keep those pot prices low, right?
Right. Right. You know, and you know what? I apologize. And I was talking about Trump and the Democratic Party, but here in the Republican Party, we just elected a hardcore Trump supporter. And guess what, people? She happens to be a beautiful black woman. I guess. So, and somebody would sit there and chastise me. You didn't have to say beautiful. We're all equal, William. She's a beautiful black woman. And actually, Randy Burholtz here is friends with her. Her name is Corinne Rankin. And we're expecting big things out of her. So when you want to talk to the party, bigotry and racism, don't look the Republican way. And with that, gentlemen, how are y'all today, though, overall? Good Friday, I hope.
Yeah, it's Good Friday. Summer Friday.
Okay, so let's get right into this. So Gabbard accuses Obama of 26 intel manipulation. She dropped what I agree is a bombshell. She declassified a report alleging Obama led a treasonous conspiracy. Now, Randy can fill us in. I'm going to ask him specifically. But I looked up treasonous, and that seems kind of like, you know, pushing, aiding and abetting the enemy. It would seem hard to prove. But I got her point. He was going against America's will. The people elected Trump. He was doing everything to thwart the Trump presidency by framing him with Russian ties. So before we get into the gist of that, that's our first topic. Gee, your initial thoughts on this Tulsi Gabbard bombshell?
Well, to me, it's the day that will live in infamy is December 9th, 2016, right? That all revolves around that one day when these guys met with President Obama. So I think we know that Trump makes a lot of claims, right? And the press loves to just say two things. Without evidence, I mean, almost every story about Trump has either the phrase without evidence or falsely claims, right? And yeah. I know Tulsi came with a lot of receipts. She did not want to have this story say, oh, she's just making it up. She came with a lot of stories, affidavits, and I think whistleblowers. I think people in the know saying, look, Brennan's trying to push this narrative. I don't want any part of this. And they would have to back out because what the evidence that they collected, I know we're going to get into it, but the evidence they collected had a different narrative until December 9th, 2016, which I'm sure we will get into as we go along.
Randy, your thoughts when this bombshell, give me your two thoughts. First, as somebody who's involved in this country as a politician and Republican, but then also as a legal scholar, how did you do it?
Sure. Well, you know, the first thing is you weren't in politics, trust your gut. We knew something was going on. You know, President Trump knew something was going on. You know, I remember being on a plane coming back from D.C. and a Democrat was just going on about the wee-wee incident, you know, and everything else. And I'm like, you know, it's like they all have the same talking points. But, you know, look, so overall, first of all, I would say, don't mess with Tulsi Gabbard and don't I mean, guys, if you remember what the Obama administration, what the Biden administration did to Tulsi Gabbard, I mean, they, you know, they put her on a no, on a, like an almost like a no-fly list or something, you know, to
where right.
They made her life a living hell. And now look, and you know, she was like me. I mean, I was a Democrat at one point. Tulsi was a Democratic congresswoman who actually ran for president, you know, on a Democratic ticket. So one, she was mad. Two, you know, I'm just looking at the U.S. Constitution definition of treason here. So article, looks like Article 3, Section 3, treason is defined as levying war against the United States or in adhering to their enemies, giving them aid and comfort. So, you know, I'm not sure this amounts to that standard of treason, but we'd have to look at the case law. But, you know, look, I mean, truthfully, if you're going to, you know, like you said, she brought the paperwork here. She's found it. She's connected the dots. And frankly, if the Democrats are going to be this bold and brash, how stupid are they to leave a paper trail? I mean, how dumb can you be to leave a paper trail? Do they think we're just stupid? The answer is yes, they do.
Well, Randy, I mean, you bring up a good point. But did they really leave a paper trail? This was the ICA, is that the term, the Intelligence Community Assessment, that yeah. Devin Nunes started right when Trump first became a president, so right on 2016, 2017. And it didn't finish until like close to 2020. Because people were saying, well, why didn't Trump release this? Well, the Democrats controlled the House. And then here's what people don't realize. Again, bringing some receipts or rather facts here. Whatever you work on that is classified remains classified, and you got to get it declassified to get it released, or it's not going to get released depending on how high that classification is. And what they don't understand, it's not the president, it's not the CIA, it's not Congress. There's a separate authority that determines the classification. Yeah. Well, it was a classified document that Nunes yeah. had worked on. And what happened was, Schiff was in power. They didn't release it, and they locked it away for 5 years. And up until a week or two ago, they still couldn't get at it, and Trump had to authorize its release. So, Randy, I'm not pushing back as much as they didn't think it was a paper trail. It was locked away with its
well,
people. Once it came out, it was like Pandora's box.
Well, but as you said, you know, well, look, in the law, when you're dealing with a client, you know, there's a difference between having something orally and in writing, you know, and the truth is, like you said, you can protect it temporarily, perhaps. You may be able to protect it, you know, on an ongoing basis. I think these guys who did this were so full of themselves. They were so confident in their own abilities that they didn't think that President Trump, that they thought they were going to bring down the president. They thought they were going to damage President Trump to where he would never run for another term or actually win. So, I mean, I don't think they thought that far ahead. I didn't think they were trying to damage him as much as possible.
Yeah. Well, yes. Well, that was the first ICA that they used what was to damage him. Let's get into that here real quick, G.
Sure.
So one of the, as I said in my opening, the most solid piece of evidence that is from a human source. So in intel gathering, the best source of information is human intel. That's why our best allies in the Middle East is Israel. They've got the best human assets in place. Well, at the first assessment report, the one that they used, that they made public, that they pre-released to the media before it even came out, you know, to start setting the narrative, the actual human source said, Putin doesn't care who wins, you know, and they didn't use that. And that's what blows my mind. And then the other two pieces of information were five CIA analysts analyzed one of them. They're like, oh, we can't use this. And they got like five different answers. And then Brennan came out and said something to the effect of like, yeah, but it just looks good or looks real or something like that. But regardless, you probably know as well that info. What are your thoughts on the intel actually used, how flimsy it was?
No, it was flimsy. I mean, we're talking about the Steele dossier, which is the basis that they had going into December 9th. But let's back up. So before the election, Hillary basically planted or plan to have two pieces of October surprises, right? And one of them was a Steele dossier, which was created by Fusion GPS. And we talked a little bit about that last week, which the reporter of the wife of the founder of Fusion GPS, go watch this show last week, wrote the Wall Street Journal last week about Epstein and Trump. So back to October 2016, Hillary had the Steele dossier, the golden showers, Trump having hookers in Russia and all that. And the other October surprise that Hillary dug up was the Billy Bush tape. So when yes. you have these two October surprises and you go, well, this one has no basis in fact. It's just almost completely made up. I think the only thing that they got right was Trump went to Russia once. That's about it. But the Billy Bush tape is actually something that he did say, right? And that was recorded and there was audio. And that was the more effective one. So they said, okay, let's put the Steele dossier away. That's useless to us. Trump wins. Surprising everybody. I mean, surprising me. I thought, okay, I'm going to have to get used to saying President Clinton again.
Yeah,
and
it
turns out we didn't have to. And so then I believe the FBI did an assessment during that time up until December 9th. And they came to Obama and they said, look, there's no evidence that Russia had anything to do with this election. They tried to interfere, but they really had no success. And like you said, they didn't really prefer one candidate over the other. And if Putin did prefer a candidate, he might have preferred not having a Republican Congress because the Republicans were the most pro-Ukraine, anti-Russian people, or politicians in our system of government. True. They go into the Oval Office. We're talking Brenner, head of the CIA. We're talking Comey, head of the FBI. Obama's there, Biden's there, Clapper's there. I mean, there was a series of people that went in, and basically they were going to get this daily presidential briefing saying, look, we have no evidence that Russia did anything, so let's put that to rest. That night, they came out of that saying, Russia, 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 Trump colluded with Russia, Trump colluded with Putin, and the New York Times came out with an article saying, okay, Trump definitely colluded with Russia. And with Putin. So what happened over the next year or two? Basically, you saw all these news reports treating that as fact. Right. When going into the Oval Office, it was proven the exact opposite. There was no evidence, and Putin did not care about any other any of the candidates. And he thought maybe, just maybe, Trump might have been the non-preferred one because he'd sweep into Republican Congress, which would have been anti-Russian. So I, you know, just to give you the details on why I called December 9th, 2016, the second day of infamy, Obama was in the White House, in the Oval Office, and to say or claim that Obama had no idea what was going on is going to be false because you have all the circumstantial evidence. Now, you're not going to have any tapes, like the Billy Bush tapes saying, Obama saying, okay, I don't care what Trump did, if it's true or false. Let's just push this out there. You're not going to have audio of that. But like you said, Brennan did say to the CIA people afterwards, and I think it was later that day or the next day, when they said, there's no evidence of this. What are you trying to push this narrative for? Brennan said, but don't you think it rings true?
Rings true.
Don't you think it rings true? And remember Dan Rather with the George W. Bush, I can't remember what we called it back then, but the draft dodging thing back in 2004, and Dan Rather just said, well, it doesn't matter whether I have facts. The charge is what matters, and George W. Bush has to answer for this. That's what Brennan was doing. It doesn't matter whether I have facts. It sounds true. We should investigate it. Totally wrong, and he's lawyered up now.
Right, right. Yes, he is. Randy, your thoughts on what G said in terms of you pretty much it sounds, I would imagine we're all pretty much on the same page with that.
Yeah, I mean, look, you know, it's selective use of intelligence. And, you know, when you're a CEO, for example, and let's say the CEO is the president, when you're a CEO / president, you're making a determination based on a totality of the evidence. And, you know, any president would be judged by the totality of the evidence they had in front of them. And I think what people are saying here, especially on the Republican side, is that totality of the evidence was that there was nothing. And I mean, and the truth is there was nothing. I mean, there was nothing that was solid. It was, you know, like in the legal, you know, in the business, it's just conjecture. I mean, there,
yes.
You know, there wasn't anything. And can you start this rumor and start these, this inquisition and have impeachment hearings? I mean, President Trump, and correct me if I'm wrong, was, he was impeached on this one. I mean, the first time he was impeached, he was on this issue, wasn't it? Or,
he was impeached
on the. I mean, at different times, he was impeached twice.
Yeah, so the first one was the Ukraine and Zelensky thing, and he said, "Look, I want some evidence of surrounding the Hunter Biden and how he got this lucrative job over there." So that was impeachment.
Yeah, but essentially they defamed an acting president. They defamed the president elect who was coming in. And they kept this process going. Comey stayed around, right? And I don't know how long Brennan stayed around. These guys stayed around. They perpetuated this when they knew it was false. I mean, look, if this was a civil trial, this is defamation. I mean, this is what CBS and ABC and everybody's going
to do. That was one of the questions I wanted to ask for you. So everybody says that the statute of limitations, all that's gone, et cetera. But, for example, Comey knew all this was fake, and then he was interviewed by George Stephanopoulos, and he said, you know, so do you think the Russia thing, and he was talking about the golden showers, you know, I don't know. When he knew the whole time it was a false story. In fact, the golden shower people, that was people talking, having fun over beers in the conversation. It wasn't even serious. Yeah. Think of when Trump sat there and made the joke about, well, maybe Russia can find out what these Hillary's emails are. Guys, remember that? And then the whole media said that was code. He was giving Russia the signal to the chat. You know, that's how that came about. So, Randy, my question to you, is there anything legally that he could pursue as a person against, like, Comey, Brennan, with all these interviews when they were saying this stuff? Or is there some kind of laws that protect that, or limitations on that too?
Well, look, you know, I can't remember, you know, whether President Obama pardoned any of these guys either, you know, or President Biden did too. I think we'd have to look at the extent of the pardons here too. But you know, let's say none of them, you know, have been pardoned here. You know, I think as President Trump, you know, said, as far as, you know, President Obama goes, there's probably a bit of the sovereign immunity, you know, the decision here protecting President Obama, but the question is, you know, is, you know, from, for his sake, you know, for him, is this egregious? I mean, was this intentionally false, right? You know, so you know, as you know, as you know, Comey and Brennan goes then too, a simple, you know, we have criminal law, we have civil law, right? So, you know, so from a civil standpoint, you know, did they have the intent, you know, and you know, like you said, you know, was the statute of limitations told? From a criminal statute, you know, did their behavior go beyond that of what a traditional CIA director or FBI director would do? You know, the truth of the matter is, you know, we just found the information now. So you know, the question is, can they be protected for some bad behavior when we didn't have the information? I mean, typically with a lot of statute of limitations, you do it from the time that you know, that the facts are found out.
Okay, so let's shift here to Obama. So Obama has been Teflon from the moment he announced if he ran. If you said anything negative about him, you were branded a racist. And that's kind of worked until he left office, and the Obama magic it was kind of dying out his second term. But this is the first time he's been tied to something. And for the audience, so what happened is this, what they're saying happened is this, that they came back to and said, look, we got nothing. There's nothing about Trump and the Russians colluding with the Russians, or the Russians wanting him to win. And boom, Trump wins. He wins the actual election. So they're getting ready to – they have a brief set up for Trump, the incoming POTUS, and for Obama, you know, a typical briefing. And before that briefing happens, Obama goes, no, you need to redo this. You need, and that's when Brennan went into action and came up used the Steele dossier, even though he claimed he didn't use it. This new report that has just been declassified, it was heavily used, even though the public, we all knew he used it. They made up the, some of the, it looks, what the term G, what was it that he said?
It doesn't ring true,
meaning his analysts were saying, we got nothing here, boss, but doesn't it ring true? So they ran with it. My point here is they're saying that this came from Obama and Tulsi Gabbard and the Trump administration, they're going after Obama. That's the first time we've ever seen that without the typical, oh, you're a racist pushback or you're this pushback or this pushback. It seems like Obama's magic glass has begun to shatter. I just want to bring that point up because nobody's talking about that point. Obama's been pretty much untouchable in this way until this week. So your thoughts on that. But two, I don't think anything's going to happen to Obama. There's a bunch of reasons why. But I think at the end of the day, this is going to destroy Obama when it comes to history a couple hundred years from now when people look at history. And I think I take great delight in that because the man is the most over – the man won the Nobel Prize because he was black. I'm sorry. And I'm not trying to play the race card here, but that's why he won it. We all know that. It's just you couldn't say it without being de-racist, but the man had done nothing. 2 months in office, and we got a Nobel Peace Prize winner because he gave a great speech here talking about bringing us all together. And the guy had 26,000 bombings in the Mideast later, killing an American citizen without any due process and bombing a hospital and the media helping them cover it up later. So G, your thoughts on Obama, his legacy, and your thoughts on him being involved in this dossier?
Yeah, I mean, let's rewind back to thinking about the 2016 election. So what was Obama's main thing? Hillary will be my third term, right? And in the balance hung Obamacare. And if you think back to 2010, after Obamacare, Obama really didn't do much after that because the Republican Congress took over and his one main accomplishment was he took out bin Laden. Right. And, you know, that was a gamble. He gambled and it paid off. So now you're looking at 2016 and Obamacare is on the line. And if Obamacare is on the line and that goes down in flames, Obama's legacy goes down in flames because then all he has is bin Laden, and that's all he did. First black man to be president and been taking out bin Laden. So that was his narrative, right? So he's sitting there going, okay, Hillary lost, Trump's coming in, Republicans have Congress, right? And there was slim majorities, but they had the House and Senate. And I think the bloom was already off the Obama rose, in my opinion. So he's thinking, we've got to do whatever we can to weaken Trump. And this was enough, I think, for McCain, who already had personal beefs with him, to come out and do, because for McCain, I loved the guy until he came out and put his pride over a country and did this.
Yep.
In the Senate, when it was his vote that basically kept Obamacare going. So I would argue that the bloom came off the Obama rose long before that, but why did Obama get reelected? Because we had Mitt Romney, kind of like the epitome of what Obama was running against, this, you know, corporate guy who's going to come over and make America a business again. So I think that's what happened there. What was your – do you remember your second question?
Well, because I don't. Legacy. I mean, this is the first time he's been successfully attacked. They're scrambling to push back. The race car doesn't work anymore because this isn't about race. It's about intel, about America's future, etc. I think this is a damning blow to his legacy because there's no doubt in me that this report is actually true, and that's why it was hidden away for 5 years.
Yeah. So if you think back to the real last Democrat president before Obama, who had a I don't know, cult-like following, right? I mean, you have to think back almost to JFK. I mean, that's a long time, right? Even Bill Clinton, he got in, but he wasn't really a true, like, liberal Democrat. He was more of a conservative Democrat. So I think with Obama, he was shielded from a lot of that, you know, the press shielded him, right? The press covered for him. I mean, the late-night jokes went to, like, real jokes and not making fun of the president. So I think Obama's legacy with this if the press is honest enough and really runs with it, it basically shows them to be corrupt. Now, I don't know that he started off corrupt. He did stay pretty squeaky clean throughout his 8 years in terms of scandals. But this is a big one, and this is how he ends his presidency in the last month of his presidency with this big scandal. But I don't know if people care. That's the problem.
I don't refer to that. That's why I said a couple hundred years when historians who weren't born, they took and they review it. They're going to go, this guy's crooked. Just for the record, real quick, I serve, and I do call him Songbird McCain. I did read about his story. I did read about how he purposely he thought he was Maverick. He would break a lot of rules and get away with it because not only was his daddy an admiral, granddaddy was an admiral. You know, he sort of passed. So when you say you lost faith in him, I'm like, I lost faith in him decades before that. And I used to be a big McCain supporter when I was younger. Your thoughts, Randy, on the Obama legacy and how he fits into this?
Sure. Obama was at another law school, and I was he was a year behind me in law school. I knew some people who knew him. They said he was the biggest Rick with a silent P that you would ever deal with. He was a terrible guy. Come on, let's just be honest. The guy was, he can't even verify, that he was even at Columbia. I mean, there are so many questions about this guy. If this guy was a white guy or an Asian guy, or a Latino or an Indian American guy, people would be asking questions. This guy had so many breaks. He was a paper tagger. So, as far as his legacy, let's pull the shades down. Let's take the sunglasses off anymore and let's look at him seriously. I mean, really, what did he do? He took so long to kill, Bin Laden too. I mean, it was ridiculous. But secondly, though, I think we now have a president who's one mad, who has been affected, and the Democrats have come against so many people. We're going to find out more and more and more and more. But let me just mention one point, though. Nobody's talking about this, and I want to talk about this. I'm sorry, not here. But the thing about Obama is Obama won a third term. You're right. Why isn't anybody saying he illegally had a third term and put him in jail for that? He essentially violated the Constitution because, let's face it, he was in charge during the Biden years. So let's put him in jail for that.
Man, Randy, that's some rough stuff there. Yeah.
Seriously, it's against the law to have a third term. And Biden was the straw candidate. I mean, we all knew Biden was gaga right from the start. I did a podcast with my daughter, 4 years ago. We knew Biden was just out there. I'm surprised he even lasted as long as he did. Every decision he made was a freaking joke. We know Obama was in charge. Come on, let's just phrase it.
I got to be honest. I never saw. I think Bush had his donor masters. Clinton had his donor masters. Everybody did it. But Obama was no different. I see Obama as a frat guy who's not the smartest guy. He's not dumb, but he's not this intellectually gifted. And my proof is every time he went off script off that teleprompter, he exposed who he was. I don't believe any of the stuff. It was Obama's third. I'm not pushing back as much as I think there were people behind Obama. I think right now Obama doesn't give a rat's tail about anything politically. I think he goes out on obligation. Okay, I gotta go out and say this or say that. But I think he'd rather go back to his men's bathhouse like he did in Tahiti right after he left office, went to his 40-man bathhouse. And I say that with a reason. Because the Democrats were all about the Republicans in North Carolina, where I'm from, talking about, the GOP's going to a bathhouse, Ms. Bathhouse, hinting at, kind of like a little gay thing, trying to get their egos. I'm like, you didn't know Obama went without Michelle to a bathhouse in Tahiti right after he left office. And my point is I just don't think he's all that. I don't think he's they chose Obama, a good-looking man. You speak eloquently, not because he's black, but because he could relate to whites, to blacks, to Asians, to the whole American spectrum. Look, I'm sorry, people. When I come and I talk and after I've been hanging around my friends back home, I come with that southern drawl with an eighth grade dialect, you're not going to take me seriously. And that's how life works. So Obama passed all of those, and it had everything to do, is this a candidate we can play? That's why Trump is maligned a lot. He talks like a freaking like the trash guy. He was the person. Remember we went on the trash? That's how he talks. And Obama,
he worked at McDonald's. Come on, man.
Yeah, that too. That too. My point is, Obama passed all the check marks. And then when somebody would bring that up, oh, you're a racist. But that's what he passed. But he had his masters that he dealt with and did as he was told. No different than Bush. And the reason I say Bush is because everybody that said Bush is he was a dummy. You know, and I got to be honest, I can't argue that. Every business Bush did, he failed. You know, I mean, my God, the guy gave a roid-filled Alex Rodriguez the biggest baseball contract in history. Come on. You know, wasn't the brightest guy around. So I guess I am pushing back, Randy. I just don't think Obama – I just think Obama would rather right now go out with the buddies, fire up a dube, and be happy, man. You know?
Let's just face it.
I mean, I would
– No.
Go ahead, Randy. I was just going to say, if you look at Obama, and I'm talking Barack, finally went on Michelle's podcast after how many – after
so
a year.
So you were one
whatever,
of the five viewers.
And he's sitting – I only saw excerpts. For the record, I didn't tune in. I saw excerpts. And he was sitting – like, you know, that cross-legged, like Muslim man spread, but he was doing that like intellectual, effeminate leg crossing, saying every real man out there needs a gay friend. Now, great. I have
friends
who are
gay
too. That's fine. What does that have to do with anything? I think that's why, like, if you look at the black men, the male population, they voted for Trump in numbers that are greater than any Republican going back to
1960.
I think the 1920s. Yeah. Or maybe, yeah, maybe Eisenhower. I'm not sure, but because Obama doesn't project himself as a strong man, right? He projects himself
as an effeminate, erudite elite,
right? And it's like, wait, he's never walked the streets like most of us. So I think that you know, he's already losing a lot of support because of that. And when he goes out there and he talks to black men, saying you're not voting for her because she's a woman? And everyone's looking at each other like, no, I think we're not voting for Harris because she's an idiot.
Exactly. So, but Randy, go ahead.
Yeah, let me push back a little bit on that one. You know, I will agree that he may not have been pulling the strings. But this whole trans, you know, multi – I don't say multicultural, that's not even the right word, but – this whole woke culture. This is Obama. This is Obama.
Oh yes. No, I agree. He was the perfect vehicle for that. He was the perfect vehicle. But hold on, Biden pushed him into the gay. Remember, it was Biden who kind of took it out the back. But I agree with you. Obama was the perfect vehicle to begin, as he said it, the transformation of America.
Yeah, and let's face it, it was a transformation of the world. I mean, if you think about it, you know. Obama's vision is Hamilton, right? The play. It's Hamilton.
Yeah.
It's erasing our culture, which they tore down our statues. Let's just face it. They tore down our statues. They were trying to create another culture. They were trying to create this whole woke culture. I mean, they were trying to have a third sex. I mean, they were pushing, and let's just be honest, they were doing this. They were pushing us away from the traditional family.
Yes.
They were saying that teachers knew more for their students than did parents. That's Obama. That's Obama's mom who was a commie. I mean, that's Obama's parents who were communists. You know, but you're probably right that he wasn't himself, but. But he had a hand in this vision of America, and I don't know if Hillary did or the like, but he had a hand in that, and that was his. That's his vision for America, where color matters.
Right.
It is the most important thing.
Right. I'll never forget, G. I want your last comments, but to your point, I'll never forget in 1997, freshman class president, UNC Wilmington, woo, go Seahawks. I'm in my Young Democrat meeting. And I'm going to officially sign, you know, I'm going to register as a Democrat. Woo! I'm going to save the world. And they started talking skin color and talking about the brown people's Latinos. And then he looked at me talking about me like I'm a brown person. And I love my family. We have brown, we have black, but we also have me. So I knew we were diverse. And in that moment, I said to myself, man, I know some lazy, I have lazy relatives. You know, I know lazy blacks. There was in South, a lot of my friends were black. I know lazy what? Oh my God, I'm a Republican, you know? Because I realized in that moment, I realized he didn't care about anything except separating us by color. And even as a 20-year-old kid, I knew at that time, this is a party. And I didn't have the words that I say now, but it, my energy, my body, what I felt is like, this is bad. This is bad. I know what's coming. Because, and I took it personally because I'm like, this guy is okay with my cousin hating this other cousin because we have different colors. He's okay with that. He wants that. And my point to you is from the late 80s, I haven't like studied this by reading books, but in a way I have, reading Thomas Sowell, following politics, and having conversations with a lot of white suburban women who fear for the kids. In the 90s, I was a young man having these conversations. So when all this transpired under Obama, Randy, I'm like 1,001%. You're right. Obama was the cat that they were going to go, we are going to transform America. Why? Because if you disagreed, you're a racist. You don't want America to come together. But he wasn't bringing America together. Case in point, the Harvard cop, he blamed the cop. Turned out the racist was a professor. Yeah. You know, if I had a son, it would look like Trayvon. Dude, your mom is white. If you had a son, he could look like me. Because you just don't know with the gene, you know? And I'm being serious. So I'm like, you are a man that is promoting hate and division, you know? And that's what you're promoting. He jumped on the bandwagon with racist hate towards Trump, you know? So, Randy, I mean, what I'm doing is, you're right. He was the perfect vehicle to push us. And before we leave, before I get your final comments on where this goes, Tosi, and I remembered it this week. Gee, you know, I talk about Amy Chua, the Tiger Mom from Princeton, and she and how she wrote a book about she studied history, how a lot of powers lost, fell, a lot of powers fell, a lot of civilizations fell because they were destroyed from within. You know, the Greeks and Romans, when they conquered a land, they allowed them to keep other ways. They allowed Rome. Rome was a million people of different ethnicities and all that, that Rome allowed. The book is called Political Tribes, Group Instinct and the Fate of Nations. And it's a must read because that's what's happening here. I have a love for anybody who wants to come to this country, but you've got to be, you got to be American. You cannot be Islam. You cannot be Latino. You cannot be black. You cannot be Asian, whatever Asian country you're from first. You have to be American first and be proud of your culture. But if you are Korean first, if I am Panamanian first, if Randy is Polish first, if G is Indian first, we're screwed because there is no American values. And let me tell you people something. Again, I'm on a rant. I apologize. But this country, this melting pot saved the world not once but twice. And if we are destroyed, who's going to stand up to the bad guys? Nobody. Look at Europe. Look at Latin America. The dictators there are happy. In Brazil, you know, with Luna, you know, in the Middle East. All they care about is killing every Christian as they're doing in Syria. That's where I have issues with Trump. Yeah, we're going to give Syria a chance. Are you stupid? These are people, you know, they're terrorists who took over Syria. Keep those embargoes in place. Oh, no, we're going to give them a shot. A month later, they're slaughtering Christians, you know. So we have to be Americans first. And people look at that as, oh, that's populism. I don't give a – better watch my mouth. I don't give a rat's tail what you call it. You have to be American first for the greatest country in the civilization of history. And my final comment on that is the Constitution, everyone acknowledges, is the most unique document in the history of the world, and the proof is we went from 13 colonies to the world's greatest power, the fastest any civilization has. We became the de facto power of the world. It wasn't Rome. It wasn't the Greek Empire. It wasn't the Persian Empire. It wasn't the Egyptian Empire. They didn't even know what the hell the real world was. We did. because of that document, and we are losing that document. All right, guys, I'm off my rant. Randy, your final thoughts on where – well, I mean, you can comment on what I said too, but your final thoughts on where we're headed with Tulsi and this Russia hoax. And the final question on that as we move on to Epstein. Critics are saying, oh, they're just using this to deflect from Epstein. I kind of – so your thoughts on that.
Yeah, so as far as Tulsi, God bless her. She's mad. She's really mad because she was put through hell. And President Trump is giving her free rein. Go ahead, Tulsi. Find everything you can. And the truth is, in politics, you don't have to be found guilty. Do you know what I mean? I mean, they can do the same thing. You know, why shouldn't we do the same thing to them that they did to President Trump?
I'm with you.
And Tulsi's a person, perfect person to do that. And she's dedicated. I mean, she'll go after it. You know, so what was the second question again? I'm sorry.
Oh, do you think that the critics are saying, oh, he's just using this to deflect from the Epstein saga?
You know, I think President Trump has probably gone through the Epstein files. You know, I've heard that he's gone through the Epstein files with a bunch of people and that he's, you know, he's probably named in there someplace, but I don't think he did anything wrong. You know, I think he was a pretty upstanding guy with him. You know, President Trump likes women. Epstein likes women. You know, but President Trump marries women. Epstein abuses women. You know what I mean? And I think the president will be clear to that. But I do think the president has realized you just can't say, okay, we're done and go. So I think the public is demanding, his MAGA is demanding something for here. And it doesn't mean a head or anything else, but they're demanding something. The problem is Ghislaine Maxwell, whatever her first name is. But, you know, and I'm a bit worried about that because I think she can make – she's going to protect her own skin any way she can. So she's just trying to get out of jail. So my fear is that she's going to make something up that can't be proved.
We'll get into that in one second. We'll get into that. I just want your final thoughts on Tulsi and the fact that Epstein is – are you saying this is just cover for the Epstein?
Well, I absolutely do believe this is cover, and this is why, and might shock a lot of MAGA people. It is cover because they've been working on this, right? And this whole Epstein thing is getting out of control. And look at what they did with this whole Russia narrative. A non-story, no basis in fact, and it became the story for 4 years. And Trump's looking at that going, okay, if a lie can become a story that derails my first term, then what could this do? Which, okay, maybe he did write that note. I didn't say anything bad about it. I mean, it was obvious he took pictures with Epstein and all that. What's the big deal? So I think Trump said, okay, look, we've got to have something else in the news cycle, and this is big, and we're saving this for a later moment, but let's bring it forward. So I can absolutely see that being an issue. Where do I think this would go? Well, at this point in time, Obama's not going to get prosecuted. He's got executive privilege. He did this while he was still president, and he can have investigations based on whatever. I mean, it could be based on a lie or for a political reason because he's president. He's got to protect this country, and that's what he would just say. I'm trying to protect this country. But I do think Brennan will be put through the ringer, and maybe Comey as well, although there's no evidence that he was involved in this whole thing. Although he did go on a lot of shows saying, I don't know, maybe this is true. So I think that might implicate him as well. So I think there's going to be prosecutions there. But we'll see in the next week.
Right. I think we are at the tip of the iceberg with Tulsi. Last week she teased us and people were like, it's a nothing burger, this or that. Then bam, her and Carolyn Leavitt kind of like lit DC up with actual receipts. And they're still digging through this. And the reason I believe it is serious is they buried this for 5 years, hiding it behind classifications. And for you guys, I had a secret clearance. We would be looking at stuff. We're like, why is this classified? Why is this? I handled the publication. I was in charge of the publication, the library. So I handled top secret stuff in the vault. You had to check it out to get in. I'd look at stuff. Why is this classified? So that I would suspect a lot of this stuff was classified too, to keep it hidden away. So more will come out of it. To G's point, I can't argue that. I was like, it's nothing to do, but it could be right. However, I also believe the Epstein burger is a nothing burger. And here's why. We talked about this last week. It's a MAGA-created event. For 4 years, they didn't talk about it at all about Biden. It's MAGA created, and already you're seeing a lessening of that topic as this topic emerges with Tulsi Gabbard. And my point being is, we are the ones who are driving it. Not me per se, but a lot of the heavy social media influencers. And the Democrats are jumping on this, but it's enough. People don't look at them as serious players in this. They're just accusing Trump. And when they politically persecuted Trump, when he got that magnificent mugshot, because I'm like, when I saw that mugshot, I'm like, you guys are so screwed. My family's in Panama lives in the barrio, you know? Exactly. It's like, they're up there like, damn, I like that pig, you know? So they don't understand. So my point being is, anything they say right now, Trump has a long leash. They're not going to believe. And MAGA is slowly going to realize Trump's not an idiot. And I'm sure it's probably happened already. Phone calls are being made. Benny, that White House visit we had you scheduled for 3 months from now, no mas. Click. And Benny's going to go, oh, hell. You know, next thing. So Benny doesn't have that MAGA visit to brag about and build another 100,000 followers in his account. So he'll chill out. People will say, that's not fair. That's not right. That's politics, baby. And I think because of all that, this will eventually take over. Epstein will die away as more and more stories come out. It's sad but true. We all want to know what happened with Epstein. But that story's long buried. And with that, let's get into Epstein here real quick. I don't want to spend a lot of time because there's not a lot. There's more innuendo. We can speculate for 3 hours. But as far as facts, we do know that Maxwell did have a meeting. Her lawyer came out and said she spoke the truth. She had nothing to hide, etc. I don't think Maxwell will do any damage, and here's why. Who holds the key to her to, I don't know, anything from a pardon to maybe saying, hey, let's reopen her case or let's go speak on her behalf? I mean, Trump holds all the cards. Again, well, that's not right. That's politics. Deal with it. I'm just giving you guys the facts. You know, Congress is demanding transparency. The problem with Congress, and they're stupid, especially that moron. Who's that moron? Massey. And for the record, you guys, the big beautiful bill, your district got squat nothing. I researched that. Y'all got nothing. Y'all too stupid to realize this guy grits off you, grits off libertarians. I'm a man of values. As he went through a makeover a couple of weeks after his wife died, looking like he's ready to pick up a new hot chick. The man's about himself. And my point being is, he's pushing this. We need all these documents released. Look, if the judge says no, as he did, you're not going to get squat release. The DOJ can only release what's not related to the case. And the whole focus right now that everybody wants, Massey, is the case. You know, now maybe there's other stuff they could release, but we don't know. And right now the DOJ is refusing to release some of the case. The MAGAs, people are demanding a client list that people are finally coming out. Dershowitz, the lawyer, there is no client list, you morons. So there's a lot of judicial and political roadblocks that are going to deepen this controversy. So, Randy. Based off Maxwell, her coming out, I mean, what's going to happen? What's going to become? What's the next phase of this? Because I have no clue what's going to happen next.
You know, as I said, you know, you have a person who's in jail. Her number one goal is to get out of jail, or to fix her image. You know, and look, this is the wife of, I mean, this is the daughter of Robert Maxwell, one of the richest people in the world and most influential people in the world. So she knows how to play the game. You know, she's gonna either, I don't say she's gonna make something up, but she's gonna do what's in her best interest. You know, the truth of it is this a nothing burger? I sort of think it is, to be honest with you. I haven't seen anything that's gonna be this big. The Democrats want it because they think it's gonna be harming Trump. They're so focused on Trump. Oh, what'll harm Trump? Seriously? I mean, haven't you tried enough? You know, and the Republicans are like, well, we want to show that Biden. You know, we want to show that Epstein and was able to, you know, doing stuff with Clinton and everything else. You know, so the truth of the matter is, you know, I think we as a country would be happy to, you know, almost like the JFK documents, release what you can release, and if there's something that's really too hot, you know.
Whoa, real quick, hold on, Randy. You said something very important there. 80,000 files were just released a few months ago.
Yeah.
Do we now know indefinitely for sure who killed him with 80,000 files released? Do we?
Yeah. Yeah. You know, and look, the problem is if there was something that was kept back, it's been so embedded right now I think what Epstein will be is 5 years from now, we won't be talking about Epstein anymore. I don't think people will be saying, well, he's dead and Maxwell's still in jail. I mean, I sort of think that's where we're going, you know, but, you know, I'm always surprised if there's a blazing, you know, if there's a doc, but it's like a prisoner testifying. Well, the prisoner wants to get out of jail. So yes. Do you believe anything they say? And I mean, Maxwell has been a denier for years. She couldn't ever see what Jeffrey Epstein, she was in love with him. For years, she thought he was in love with her. So, I mean, I don't think she's going to tell us the truth that everybody thinks she's got. I wouldn't trust anything she says.
Gee, Epstein was probably in love with her until she hit 18. Your thoughts, geez, the DOJ's refusal to release the files, do you think, as many critics say, well, they're shielding Epstein co-conspirators, they're trying to hide it. Is this meeting with the DOJ, with Maxwell, was that just a ploy to say, hey, we are talking to her, but in essence, they just want to shield the elites? Is that what you see here or not? What's your thoughts?
I mean, I think here's what the Democrats want. They want some evidence that Trump went to the island and with someone under 18, right, basically. What the MAGA people want is who else other than Epstein did stuff with people under 18 without their consent or even with their consent, right? That's illegal. So I think the DOJ is in this position where, okay, well, we've got this list and there are a lot of innocent people on it. But also I think they're using that as cover for not releasing who they know is guilty. And these are probably powerful people across the world. One of them, you know, might have stood at a lectern in 1998 saying, I did not have, you know, who knows. I don't want to accuse them either, like Democrats are accusing Trump. So is this to show that they're investigating? I don't know. We have a new administration. We got new people at the top of the DOJ, and maybe this is a real investigation to say, hey, what do you know, and tell us again. And maybe dangling a pardon out there. I mean, that is
okay. Now I get you, G. So the final question to both of you guys, because we're talking about this, but we're saying nothing. And I don't mean that in a negative way. What I'm saying is we really don't know. Nobody knows. One point and one question. Comment on both, please, G. Megyn Kelly said that one of her sources was saying that they believe that the Biden administration may have put Trump's name in certain spots to make it difficult to come out. And my point is, I've talked about this as a conspiracy theory in my culture podcast, The Red, White, and Rude, comes out every Monday, folks. Check it out. But my point is the more I look at this, I'm like, it's kind of like when you're 5 years old and the parents are fighting and you go to your room and you never find out what your parents are fighting about. That's what this whole Epstein case seems in a way. These are the elites of the world, some of the most powerful people. And some of their dirt has come out, but not enough to kind of expose them. And this was decades ago, into the 90s and 2008. I'm like, everything of note is like the JFK files. It's buried so deep, destroyed, convoluted. Hell, I think it's in the same spot where JFK's brain is at. So your thoughts on Megyn Kelly and my talking point?
I mean, did they poison pill it? I don't know. I mean, Trump's in there because he was friends with Epstein. There's pictures, there's video. You know, even though Trump's denying it, there's this handwritten note. I mean, Bill Clinton was also in that same book, and the media didn't say, oh, Bill Clinton also sent a note to Epstein for his birthday. So, I mean, that stuff's in there. I don't know if they, like, highlighted it above everyone else. But here's the thing. If Trump was guilty of something, Biden would have released it because Biden was behind in the polls from at least the end of 2023, maybe the beginning of 2024. And they would have released it saying, look, this guy is guilty of a crime that everyone easily understands is a crime. And they would have ended basically his presidential run right then and there. But they didn't, because they know whatever's in there is not big enough. That's all they could come out with. 2003, he wrote a note on a kind of a picture of a naked woman, like a hand drawn. Like,
look, Trump was a player. Trump was a player back then. So, Randy, the Megyn Kelly thoughts about one of her contacts saying that Biden could have put some poison pills. By poison pills, meaning they put him not just that he met or knew him, but like he was in certain situations to keep it from coming out. That's one theory. The other one, Randy, I want your thoughts on as it just looks odd that the House pushed this to September. It kind of isn't a good look for Republicans, like they're avoiding the Epstein situation where they were with this upcoming, before they went into recess, they were scheduled to speak on it, but then he pushed the recess early so they wouldn't. Your thoughts on that and the potential poison pill? Then we'll close this out.
Yeah. So on the Megyn Kelly issue, we don't know. I mean, the Democrats. And I don't want to say Democrats because they're not. They're progressives. The progressive wing, these guys came at America when we were at our weakest during COVID. And we should never, ever forget that. And they have a history of doing that when we're at our weakest.
Right.
Now, they will take any vehicle they can to hurt the president because he, I don't want to say he's Teflon because he's not. But they will try everything they can. So I would not be surprised if the Democrats try it. But as far as the vacation, I don't want to say this, but I think a couple of Congress people have gotten in trouble lately for saying, oh, man, I need to go on vacation right now. Oh, wow, you work from Tuesday to Thursday every week, and then you go on vacation. So I think part of that is, one, everybody's burned out with the big, beautiful bill and everything else. And I think they're going on vacation because I frankly think you can't get those people together for a long period of time and have them be, So yes, it helps to have a break from it. And maybe some of it may be, like an intentional timeout when there's 4 seconds left, But in the end, I frankly think Epstein, this will go in the long line of JFK, RFK, John Lennon, Lindbergh, mm-hmm. baby, and everything. I think this will be one where there's going to be many, and people are going to release 10,000 documents, when exactly as you said, mm-hmm. and they're going to find nothing.
Randy throwing out the Lindbergh baby. Completely forgot about that special. I saw that documentary before Netflix had this great series. Randy, I was laughing. They're burnt out, the big, beautiful Bill. Right? They work 147 days a year. Come on, man. 147 days. You know what? We always sit there say that in anger. But the reality is that's probably a blessing in disguise, that they only work 147. How much more destruction could they do? All right, let's jump on over to the New Jersey U.S. attorney secession and the dispute. Trump has an interim U.S. attorney pick, Alina Habba. Boy, Habba, 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 Habba is what I say. And she is clashing with federal judges who replace her with Desiree Lee Grace. Desiree Lee Grace is her first assistant. She was in there for 120 days. Her end was coming up. She had not been confirmed. Hasn't even come up for confirmation. And by law, the judges can pick a different U.S. attorney. Now, the difference here is once they pick it, that person can be there forever. There is no time limit. And worse, these are three Democrat-appointed judges. Hakeem Jeffries is undergoing an ethics investigation for supposedly having spoken to them. And Trump, boy, this is, going back to Tulsi just real quick, in terms of all the potential legalities, I hope they can be as creative and stay within the law and keep the sanctity of the law as they did in this move. When they removed Habba's, you're no longer our candidate, for a U.S. attorney. They removed her for that. Then they immediately appointed her as the temporary U.S. attorney, which has no time limit. It's brilliant. Now, Desiree is saying, I'm going to report to my job whether you lax it or not. And they're saying the judges can recognize her. That's fine. And I don't think Trump did this to set up this battle. But this is, Randy, this is where you come in. This is why we're paying you the big bucks to be on Fired Up. This is setting up Article 3. Correct me if I'm wrong. It's Article 1, Article 3. Battle. The executive versus the judiciary. Because the U.S. attorney falls under the executive branch. So who the hell are these judges to appoint a lawyer? Well, it's in the law by Congress passed. I'm like, I don't care. If Trump goes, I get to make that pick because it falls under the executive authority, I will make that pick. So I think this is going to wind up with the at SCOTUS, and SCOTUS is going to go, yeah, that's the president's option, not these activist judges again. And then we're going to see Ketanji Brown Jackson go, you go, New Jersey judges, you go, rah, rah, rah. Randy, your thoughts on this case, the shrewdness of Trump, and are we looking at a SCOTUS battle? Let me go to G first, and then we'll go to you.
Yeah, I mean, I think this will set up a battle because Trump basically wants to put his people in there, right? And what's interesting to note is the judges put in Desiree Leigh Grace, who's also a Republican, but she's more of a, hey, let's all work together, whereas Haba is more of a, no, I'm going to follow the law and I'm going to do this. So I think the Democrats are upset because she brought charges against Representative LaMonica McIver. And why did she do that? Because McIver was obstructing federal agents in Newark, basically upsetting the Democrats. So if she's going to follow the rules and basically do Trump's bidding.
I want you to go on, but real quick, that was the lady when we saw the video, and she's like, pow, pow! You know, pushing against the federal agents and all. You're going to jail, lady, for those of you who don't remember. I apologize. Go on, G.
Yeah. No, I was basically saying, like, what I think what the Democratic judges don't like about her is that she's actually doing what Trump wants. And that's the truth of it. I'm not going to say, oh, no, she's her own person. I believe she's doing what Trump wants. So that's why Trump wants her in
there. You
know,
hey, Randy, you're a pretty big guy. Y'all, Randy's like, I don't know how tall, but he towers over me. But I don't know, man. I think Monica could take you out. I mean, that would
Monica
be fierce.
She could.
Your thoughts here, Randy.
Yeah. Yes. Let's look. It's Article 2. Article 2 is the executive power of the president.
Oh, yeah, Article 2.
This is Article 3. So, you know, look, this is weird. This is just weird. I mean, when do you get a situation where judges can make a determination as to who can essentially they're replacing the president's authority? What? No way. I mean, the judges are not designed. Judges aren't designed to pick anything. The judges are designed to determine whether the laws are in conjunction with the Constitution. Period. I mean, if they have any other powers, Congress needs to really have a look at that, and the Supreme Court needs to look at that. The problem is, you know, you have this sort of divine judiciary, imperial judiciary, that thinks it's, you know, that's the end all and be all. I mean, look, the president, as you said, is brilliant. His legal people are brilliant. And I am so, so proud of Republican office holders and lawyers today, because I'm in the Republican National Lawyers Association. And 12 years ago, we were saying to people, oh, we're tired of losing. We're tired of playing defense, and we're always playing defense, and now we're playing offense. And you know what? We're pretty good at it because we know the Constitution better than they do, actually. You know, and it's nice to fight back. The truth of the matter is, I hope the president gets his way here. I think if this goes to the Supreme Court, the president will win. And you know, shake it up a little bit. You know, we need to shake up the system. But the president, some of the stuff he's doing is brilliant. And even if he doesn't have full authority, they are picking questionable areas and taking a stance, a pro-Republican, pro-American stance, that they're then saying to the Supreme Court, hey, do your job. So.
Right. Okay, so what about the blue slip? Should they honor the blue slip, G? And for the audience, the blue slip is what's traditional is when these type of appointments happen, the senators, they shouldn't have this kind of power, to be quite honest, but I see why they have. Technically, they represent the state. And they sit there and say, yeah, I'm okay with that, U.S. Attorney, no worries. But then they can just withhold the slip, or they call it a blue slip. I can't remember where, no, we don't like her. And traditionally, if that happened, they would pull the recommendation. But that has been ignored in the past. G, your thoughts on that? Because we're talking Haba, but it's Bill Essely here in California as well. So you've got four U.S. senators saying no with tradition, with protocol to Trump. You have Booker and I'm drawing a blank on the other. Who's the other senator in New Jersey? Anybody know? You have Booker, another one. And then here you have oh my God, I've just been tweeting about him or did a shorts on him, the Latino, Padilla and Schiff in California for Essely and Booker there. They're saying no. Gee, your thoughts. Should they sit there and say, screw you with that blue slip? We're getting our guy in.
I mean, blue slips are just advisory, right? It's just saying, hey, that's a good, you did a good move there, or no, we don't like that move. But Trump can do whatever he wants. So I think they're treating blue slips as more authoritative than it really is. And I don't think they're going to win. The Constitution doesn't give them the right to say, my blue slip matters, and you got to do what I say. And now I will say another thing. Like, a lot of Democrats view the separation of powers and the checks and balances as paper, rock, scissors.
Yeah.
And paper always overrules the rock, and that's not true. They all have checks and balances against each other. So, you know, I think they're going to lose. I agree with Randy. They're going to lose in the Supreme Court.
Right. So, Randy, you know what irks me is Pam Bondi stepped in it. She's out in February. Oh, I'm looking at the list on my desk and all that. So she did step in it. But she's been brilliant when she was Florida AG. She does some good things. And she's not going to get credit. But I'm like, this is why she's the in charge of the DOJ. This is a brilliant move. Okay, we're just going to pull it and then just assign her. Nobody saw that coming. I mean, I read the reports. I saw the post. And it was obvious that the Democrats were in shock. This is why she was picked, because she's good. They may have wanted Gates, but there was no way Gates was going to get over the finish line. She not only got in the finish line, she seems to be recovering. I don't know if this will redeem her in MAGA's eyes, because they all want a scapegoat, but I thought this was brilliant on her thought. Your thought on the blue slips and Pam Bondi here, and then we're going to close this section out.
Look, blue slips, you know, started in 1917, and they were really just an informal process, and they became a little bit more formalized. But what do you do in a state that's totally under the guise of the progressives, and it is so far left? I mean, of course they're going to say bad things about Bill Saley. Bill Saley is wonderful.
Oh, you know, he's the man.
Bill Saley is kicking butt. And you know what? You know, we need more Bill. We need 10,000 Bill Saleys out here. You know, Pam Bondi, sure, she's going to make some mistakes. You know, she's I don't know, she's fairly young. I guess in the late 40s or something. But
oh, no. She is 60 years old.
Is she?
See? Yeah.
Really?
Let me double check that. But I am 99.9%.
She does not look 60.
No. We need to get the phone number of her plastic surgeon.
No, she does. I mean, what's her
name? Oh, I apologize. She is 59 years
old. Wow. Holy heck. You know, get that number now, man. I'm telling you. But
a lot goes downhill in 1 year from 59 to 60.
But anyway, but Pam Bondi, you know, look, I'm friends with Harmeet Dillon. I know Harmeet. Harmeet is a kick-ass.
Another beautiful woman, too.
I mean, Harmeet, like, you know, sink her teeth, bite, and not let go. The bulldog. You know, Pam Bondi's the same way. Do you know what? It's about time we have people on our side fighting back. So, look, brilliant move. You know, what you do in politics is you throw it against the wall. You see what works sometimes, you know.
Right.
And sometimes you win. Sometimes you lose. But the good thing is we're making the Democrats spend money that they would typically spend on an election. So always remember that. They're spending a lot of money here. The more we have them fight on stuff like this, the West are going to have to fight and other stuff. So that's what we're doing too. So,
right. And for the audience, it's Cory Booker and Andy Kim. So I apologize. I don't apologize. I don't know you. I don't like you. You have a D by your name now. We all know who you are. But Andy Kim, they withheld their boosters. So for the record, New York Senator Chuck, what did Trump call him? Little Palestine or something like that? Chuck Palestine Schumer, he withheld blue slips in 2025 for Jay Clayton and Joseph Nocella, citing past GOP obstructions. I'm like, just do away with those slips, because we are so tribalistic right now, nobody cares. I think it's a brilliant move. I think Pam Bondi, and I'll say it, you know, Pam Bondi, Harmeet Dillon, Bill Esselin, we got all the good-looking people who are also kicking ass, you know, on our side.
Hey, it's about time the Republicans have good-looking people.
There you go. We're us three just aren't
enough.
All right, guys. Let us move. Well, before I move on, any final takes on the New Jersey? Are we good to go on that?
Yep.
All right. Let's close this out, my friends, with some hot takes. Trump's victories in Democrat extremism. Right now, the Democrats just came out with this, you know, like we did in 2012, we did the Republican Party review. What I found so nasty about that. Well, we got to be more pro-immigration. It wasn't a review. It was like, what are Democrats doing? And we do, we need to be more like Democrats. Luckily, Trump came in. So the Democrats came out with their own version because they are struggling with people. Let's take our tribalistic hats off. And I'm being serious here. I know we joke a lot, but if you were a Democrat right now, what would you actually tell the this is what we got to do, people? Gee.
Well, I go back to the 90s, right? And after George H.W. Bush beat Michael Dukakis, who actually was 20% ahead in the polls, and George Bush wins it anyways, and they had some soul searching because they were too liberal. And they ended up landing on a guy from Arkansas who's conservative. So I think coming back to the middle and finding a – and this is not even a conservative liberal. Like Trump is more of a populist, right? So he caters more to the conservatives but has some liberal ideas as well. And that's what they've got to find. They got to find their guy. And a lot of what I'm hearing and is Stephen A. Smith. He talks – he says it like it is. He seems very genuine and honest, and – presidential elections always come down to who do you feel like is more genuine? Who do you want to have a beer with? And if it's Stephen A. Smith versus I don't know who it would be, he has a good chance of winning. I would want to have a beer with him. Not that I would agree with his policies, but I would want to have a beer with
him. Oh, gotcha. You're pissing me off. You don't follow sports, damn it. I know Stephen A. Smith, and he is no moderate. He is a guy who goes with the political winds, and come every November, cha-ching, Democrat, baby.
That's what I'm saying. He's a populist.
But
I'm
he's not
saying
that.
He's a
not
moderate.
That.
I'm saying he's a populist.
He is succeeding where Gavin Newsom is failing, trying to be seen as a moderate. The guy uses a race card every other week, but he's none of that. He is a ratings hound. He's a showman. Anyway, I apologize to you. It's just, I can't stand the guy. Now,
he's yeah, rebranding.
So, Randy, G's correct. One in five Democrats view their party as radical. 56% are open to collaborating with Trump, whereas 38% are on the AOC bandwagon. You know, so, again, in a serious note, what would you tell Democrats? This is what you got to do to get your party back on track.
So, two things. So, I'm old enough to have been in the Democratic Party when we supported Clinton. And Clinton was seen as a conservative versus George Bush Sr. He just was. He was – the Republicans turned against George Bush Sr. because he was seen as not being conservative enough.
I mean, honestly.
Yeah. And you know, that's why some went with Ross Perot. But Clinton – I was part of a group called – what was it was called? The Democratic Leadership Council, and it was a group of Democrat conservatives, many of now who have become Republicans. We met in New York City, and we sat down, and you know, we sat down and we talked about what we needed to do, you know. And so, but the person I would, you know, Democrats need to just look to one person, and that's Tulsi Gabbard. Tulsi Gabbard ran for president a number of years back. And they got her so angry that she left. They need to sit down with Tulsi Gabbard, you know, and she'll never do it now because they get her so mad. But they need to look at her career and to see where did they go wrong with her, you know, because she's now solidly in our camp and she's going to destroy Obama and that party as much as she can because they tried to destroy her.
Not to defend the Democrat Party, but it was really one woman. Hillary Clinton. She's a Russian asset. And the media ran with that for 4 years. Okay, so final comments on this before we go on. But Trump defunds NPR, PBS. Got that done. The Supreme Court came down and said, yeah, you can whack the Department of Education. You know, he's appointing more judges. We're seeing the fruits of his 6-3 appointment, you know, playing a team up in SCOTUS. You know, he's got Colbert's canceled. He didn't get him canceled. Numbers did. But there's just too many wins. It's like, you know, it's orgasmic, you know? Can this continue with Trump, Randy, or is Murphy's Law eventually going to create some headway wins here?
Well, here's the problem. President Trump is winning in the federal level. I'm very, very concerned about Congress. I'm very concerned that Democrats are going to play some tricks like Gavin Newsom is trying to play here in California about redistricting, which should be illegal. Redistricting now to get rid of Republican territory. They're going to pull out every trick in their book, legal or illegal, to fight us right now. And the problem is we have some districts here, you know, where some Republican Congress people have lost.
And, David Valdavo is up for grabs that seat, they say.
Well, but you know, so what was the name of Orange County? Michelle Steele lost. Mike.
Ken Young's isn't safe.
Yeah. Mike Garcia lost. Down here, Jim Desmond, I think, is running a good campaign against Levin.
But he's going against a billionaire. Yeah. I see what you're saying.
I mean, seriously, though, but the truth is, I think we – just remember, the midterms are about Congress and some senatorial seats and some gubernatorial seats. The problem is, you know, they're not nationwide. Nationwide, we've won. But on a district-by-district level, it's hard for some people to give up the D and the blue.
Right. No, I agree. I think the key to us winning Congress and taking a few more seats is simplistic. If the economy is booming, Trump can run on this, and the Democrats are so fractured, let's hope they stay fractured. So I think this could be one of those exception years. But we also got to see how Elon and this third party does. I think Elon is like, how do I get out of this? You know, when you kind of, it's like when you commit the date to take the ugly girl to the prom, you're like, oh my God, how do, I'm being mean, I know. But yeah, my example is, you know, when you get into a situation, you got to get out of. I think that's what Elon's doing right now. But I think all the congressional seats, the plus on our side is if the economy starts to do well. And I think all sides, especially there's certain things you can do that are givens that jack it up. And I think these tariff deals, all these countries coming, as the more and more that they come, as the economy gets better, wages get better, you're going to see more black, especially blacks coming to Trump. And those are key voters in a lot of these districts. And here it's Latinos, and the shift is continually happening. So I agree with you, Randy. I don't think it's as bad as it normally would be. All right, let's move on here. Historic settlement with Columbia University on civil rights violations. $200 million settlement. Columbia came out and right after the settlement, suspended 80 kids for all those sit-in riots, which is pretty much what they were. They can't do this mass. How big a victory is this, Randy, for the Trump administration? Actually, how big a victory is it not only for Trump, but for Jewish Americans, but for America? Because that's a training ground, our universities. So this is a victory on many levels, I believe. Your thoughts?
Yeah, you know, President Trump is winning by example here to scare the other universities in that. You know, and I think we saw one thing, too, that came out last couple of days, it's sort of similar vein here, is that a bunch of universities have been discriminating against Americans. They've been giving special scholarships to illegal aliens. And the DACA recipients. But you know what? President Trump is doing it. The fact that they're negotiating with him is a good thing. You know, the interesting thing, I think, is what do you do with that money that they're getting? And I think Columbia was, what, $200 million or something.
Give it
to the federal government or the like, you know. But you know, he's doing it, and he's embarrassing these places, you know. And isn't it sad? The president has to convince them to enforce the law. You know, like with that group that broke into the library. And
the library, yeah.
I mean, isn't it sad that the president has to do this? You know, but look, the truth of the matter is we need to get the military back on U.S. on American campuses as far as our ROTC programs. We need to get conservative professors back, you know, there. We need to get the progressive radicals out. If you protest, you're gone. I mean, look, if you're violent in protest, maybe you're gone or something like that. But, you know, the president has to have he can't just go just one by one. He's got to have policies across the board. But the one thing President Trump is doing, no other president has done as much. No other Republican president has had the guts. He's enforcing law.
Correct.
And that is so wonderful.
Correct. G, your thoughts. And real quick, G, one of the things that came out of this, too, and I first discovered this back in the, I don't know, 80s, 90s on what's that, Law and Order. And then I remember going to community school and being in the library and reading some articles on how terrible these, you know, when something happens, an assault or something, how they go in front of the school boards and how the cover-ups begin. But that was also a major problem here, you know, and there's a Jewish kid who's actually suing. I want to say Columbia or Harvard. And I'm like, this kid's probably got a good case. The way all this is, I'm like, that'll never see the light of day. I'm sure they're going to probably pay the kid off. He doesn't even care about the degree after how much he's probably going to get from them. But your thoughts overall on all this, a big win here?
Yeah, absolutely. I think your last point in terms of being a big win for America is, I mean, that is the best point. Because I'm an elected member of a school board, and it's a K-8 district, and our policy is we're politically neutral, right? We don't present political arguments for K-8. Once you get into high school and college, I personally think it's okay to start introducing political opinion as long as you do it in a balanced way. Like, this is what the left says, and this is what right says. And, you know, I see this ad on all these YouTube political shows of Ground News now, and, you know, we're not sponsored by them, but you need something like that presented in these colleges, especially because they're not trying to train the workers of the future. It seems like they're trying to train the voters of the future, and that's a problem, right? They're indoctrinating them, and then they come out of there saying, oh, the Palestinians are the basically the black slaves of the 1860s Israel, right? Like, that's not even close to being accurate. I mean, here, black slaves were actually victims. There, okay, some of them are victims, but many others are terrorists. So they're presenting this very distorted view, and I'm glad that they have to pay out the wazoo so that they won't do this again, hopefully. I mean, we don't really know, but hopefully it sets a precedent that, look, you will not do this again, and if you do want to present arguments, it's going to be fair and balanced, and many times for these universities, it's
right.
not.
No, I agree. And for the audience out there, I don't know, 15 years ago now, I had lunch with my friend Oscar. Oscar looked like he could have been one of Noriega's enforcers. That's how thuggish he looked. But Oscar was a good father, and he wasn't distraught, but he was angry. He goes, I went to my child's meeting. Parent-teacher conference. This was a grade school. And he said, and Oscar's very religious. He was angry. They had all the pride stuff out there. They were teaching his kid about homosexuality. It was the beginnings of what we're seeing now that proliferated heavily. And it made me realize the indoctrination is, when we were young, it started maybe in high school. And then in college is when you got heavy. Now it's in grammar school. It keeps going through middle school. They give you the heavy push in high school. And in it's kind of like you're moving from JV to varsity, going to college. And they are not teaching you to be a productive American in society. They are teaching you how to vote, how to hate Anglos, how to hate American values, and how to vote progressivism and socialism. Oh, wait, that's pretty drastic. Yeah. Really? Look who they just elected in the Democrat primary, not just in New York, who we all know, Mamdani, but in Minneapolis.
Oh, my God.
You know, a socialist there. You know, so this is a massive win. And kids, my friend's niece graduated from nursing school, took an extra six-month course, graduated from that, immediately some kind of assistant anesthesiologist or something like that. Earning $70,000, she had like $15,000 of school debt paid off, and she's earning more than that liberal arts degree major at a Vanderbilt, at a Columbia, at a Princeton. And let me tell you something: I work with Ivy Leaguers in a nonprofit, and I'm like, damn, how many years is it going to take you to pay off that $500,000 you owe from that Ivy League when this job I know for a fact is only paying you $35,000? You know, so this is a great victory. All right, let us move on to Trump secures a landmark U.S.-Japan trade and investment deal. Randy, you haven't been around to our good old boys minority club here. You're the white guy. We only allow him special access at times. So you're in now, just to let you know. He's in now. But G and I, on a serious note, we've been talking to chairs from day one. We've had like multi-hour podcasts breaking it all down. So let's start off with G here. G, what's your take on this Japan-U.S. trade deal? And real quick, because I had not looked it up, so I hope I'm not throwing a hook here onto you. I'm hearing that the automakers aren't happy, but I just see good things out of this deal. But what are your thoughts on the trade deal here?
Well, I think it's a good thing because I think they were the ones up in the air, right? I mean, they're one of our closest trading partners, and I think they were really holding the line for a while. So to secure a deal where Japan commits $550 billion in U.S. directed investments, and on top of that, whatever is made and sold here by Japanese companies, we retain 90% of the profits. Like, that's amazing. And then we only have a 15% tariff on them. I think it was in the 40%. Now, I believe Trump had, his goal was 10% for all countries. So this is a little higher. But I mean, I think it's amazing. So we have increased market access in Japan with a 75% increase in rice imports, $8 billion in agricultural purchases, including corn and soybeans. And they're going to buy 100 Boeing aircraft over so many years. And they, and here's the big thing, right? They, now we can sell American cars and trucks in Japan. That's huge.
So Randy, I kind of look at the United States like a Costco or a Sam's Club, meaning you got to pay a membership fee and then you can shop to your delight and you get things great prices. That's how I view America. We are, I forget how many trillions worth we are. We said that we found out in a piece by, we are worth trillions in terms of our buying power. I kind of view us like that. So when I look at a 15% baseline tariff, I'm like, I'm okay. Because the profits you're going to make on Americans, that 15%, it's who cares? Your thoughts on this deal?
Yes. So look, you know, so overall, it's good that the president has got a deal with one of our major allies. You know, and you know, we can go back to that sort of, you know, sort of lower tariff and duty, you know, policy between friends. You know, I've just seen one article that questions it and says, well, does this mean more so that the jobs we were promised in the U.S. are not going to be here? So, you know, I'm a couple of things there. But, you know, a group that I'm affiliated with, the GOP Union Caucus, had Ambassador Jamison Greer, the U.S. trade rep, actually speak a week ago. And so, you know, I've been following him and also following the work of his predecessor, Robert Lighthizer. And so if you guys haven't read Robert Lighthizer's book, you should read it, you know, because what it essentially says is that no trade is free, you know. And so,
exactly.
So what Ambassador Greer said, you know, it was really this American worker first tariff policy, you know, where as you were saying, you know, I mean, it's almost like we have this big market and people should pay to play. You know, they should pay.
Exactly.
It should be fair for American workers.
Pay to have access to it.
Well, that's right. That's right. And, you know, the president's very smart. I mean, and look, the truth is, if you look at, you know, and I took a course on this once, and it was sort of me and the professor talking the whole time. You know, we were in class, and I got to learn a lot about trade law. You know, and it's very interesting. But President Trump has an America First trade policy, and he's serious. Ambassador Gruber was telling us that whenever they do a deal, they contact some of the labor unions, and they say to them, "Hey, look, what do you think about this? Is this fair for the American worker?" You know, so where have you ever gotten that before? Whoever did that outside of President
Trump? Now, Randy, you bring up something, and forgive me, America, but you're not going to like me hearing this. Get your heads out of your butt. We all look at when you don't leave the basement, you don't travel the world, you don't come from a different country, you have no idea how good we have it here. So to want to be kind to everybody's great. But in the 70s and 80s, manufacturing left us. Why? For the cheaper dollar, for child abuse and child labor overseas. And we were okay buying cheap stuff, but it was at the expense of America. The disparity of money in terms of what the well-off versus the working class has is so – it's growing wider, as Scott Bessent said it has, and this will help bring it more – In line. Look, we want everybody to succeed, but you need to understand the libertarians have been wrong. They will always be wrong. We will never have free trade. To have free trade means human nature has to work a certain way. And we are not born good people. We are taught to be good people. We are born just like any other animal as survivors. So, and my point in saying that is, China has taken advantage of us. The EU has taken advantage of us. Vietnam, Indonesia, every freaking country out there has taken advantage of us. Free trade has never existed. And it was okay after World War II because being the greatest nation in the world, being a nation that was the least traumatized because the battlefields weren't on our homeland, we had the money, the power, and the wealth to help rebuild the world. Those days are gone. Now it's an equal playing field. We have the biggest market in the world of supply for your products. There's a price to pay. It's kind of like the good-looking girl who gets into the club for free and the guy's got to pay. To the world, you're the guys. Period. End of story. All right. Let's move on to our final story of the night. And this one here, the last one here was geared more towards the G-Man strength. This one here is a little legalese because we need a little bit of legal education here. Because while we may not know which way Mrs. Macron swings between the legs, we are going to find out because President Emmanuel Macron and his wife, his so-called wife, per Candace Owens, Brigitte, has filed a 22-count civil defamation lawsuit against Candace Owens in Delaware Superior Court, accusing her of falsely claiming Brigitte is transgender. She's saying he's a man. He's swinging it, you know, and spreading related baseless allegations. So now my take, Randy, I want you to kind of answer this one here, but the thing about Candace Owens that people don't realize, and I did not see this 8-part series. I remember when she promoted it and it came out. But her and Laura Loomer have with this thing in common. You don't mess with them because their research is pretty much top notch. So my take is, what's going to happen here? Because she's pretty good at research. And here's the thing. I know you have to, one of the things is, Randy, you can put it in layman's terms, but you have to like know it's fake and you're still promoting it. You look at Candace and this woman believes Brigitte's a man. So I just don't see how Macron can come here with our levels of defamation, which is much different than Europe, where if you look wrongly at a politician, you're going to go to jail in the UK and France. Here it's much different. So, I mean, can you educate us on what they're going to have to literally prove? And is it feasible here? I mean, if you had to put odds on this case, what are we looking at?
Well, you know what? Well, first of all, if it goes before a jury, who knows? You know.
Jury. No, we don't want to see Brigitte before a jury like that.
No. But you know, so let's break it down a little bit. So people who are in the public eye, there's a higher standard for them because they're in the public eye. People talk about people in the public eye a lot. So the first question is she in the same boat as her husband would be? You know, he is a public figure, you know, governmental figure. People talk about him, make fun of him all the time. You know, she's a wife. So there's a little bit of that question. Do we have a lower standard of defamation for spouses and children than we do for the person? You know, but you know, on the basis of just defamation, I mean, you know, look, if it's true, you know, Candace wins. I mean, it's true. And you know, look, if she's saying it as a parody, and you know, look.
She's not. She is dead serious. Real quick, Candace came out and said, oh, I can't. What is it when they call the witnesses the depositions? She was like foaming at the mouth at the thought of the depositions. So she's dead serious about this. She's always been dead serious about this. And she was like chomping at the bit at the deposition. So there's no parody in this.
And you know what? God bless her. I mean, if she wants to lose $22 million, if she's wrong and she wants to lose $22 million, she'll lose something. It may even be a dollar, you know. But I mean, she better be right. I mean, I don't know what her source is. I mean, does she have records? Or I mean, if she wins, she's going to shock us all. We'll be like, oh.
Well, Randy, you know, we are going to assign to you to watch her 8-part series and report back.
Okay, thank you very much. Thank you very much.
Gee, your thoughts before we close the show out.
I mean, this is the same wife who slapped the president, right?
And just real quick, she's always wearing that same wig, which doesn't help her cause.
Yeah. No, but she's older. Maybe her hair's thinned out. I mean, I don't know. I can't tell if she's, I mean, if she is a woman, which I'm assuming she is. But if she's a man, I mean, she's hiding it really well. But I think it's ridiculous for Candace Owens to go after this and put herself in legal jeopardy. But she's entitled to. The First Amendment gives her the right to say whatever she wants. But the First Amendment doesn't protect you from being sued for what you say. And so I think that's what's going to happen here. I think she'll be sued. And like Randy said, if she's right, she gets off scot-free. If she's wrong, she'll pay a pretty penny. I don't know if Candace Owens has millions of dollars to fight this thing for the sake of ratings.
Well, think about it, too. Is she doing it for publicity?
Oh,
she's going to be more popular.
Yeah. Yeah, but she's done these type of series before, so it's in her. I'm not defending her as much as like Candace. She believes he's a man, and her amount of research. I'm like, this isn't going to be as easy as Macron. And here's the other thing: how much embarrassment do the Macrons want to suffer here in America? With I think they may be thinking European laws. And no, that's not how it is in America. The standard is so much higher. And I agree with Gannis with the deposition. I think this could be she could be a woman, but the embarrassment they're going to go through, world leaders. I mean, the mocking that Macron, what was your first thing? Oh yeah, we all remember getting slapped in the bed. I mean, he's not seen as a manly leader. He's mocked for that. She's seen, and Randy, to answer your question, since I got into politics in 2015 and working from home and all that, whenever I see Macron, she's not far away and she's in the news as much. She's like, I'm not equating her to Hillary in personality, but in terms of visibility, she's like Hillary. She's out there a lot. So this is going to be fascinating to watch. I'd love to see Candace win just to spite Macron. I can't stand Macron. I
think But if you think, though, to him, how's the natural way to show this? Okay? You know, she has to go and show her part.
Well, that's what I'm saying. I don't want to be part of that jury.
But how embarrassing, though. I mean, if you think about it, you know, so what would Macron's process, you know, what would his attorney do? You know, so it's like, okay, so we're going to get like three like doctors to say she's a woman, okay? And then Candace Owens will have to probably get, she'll probably have to get her people to. But you know, how embarrassing though, to put your wife, to put your spouse.
And that's what I'm saying, the embarrassment. So I think they're just going to try to talk to her behind the scenes, because this is what I didn't mention that you guys may not be aware of, is Macron called President Trump, and Trump called Candace. This was back in February, January, February. Hey, can you lay off, Bridget, you know, he's feeling violated, you know? Yeah, but that happened. She came out and talked about, yes, the president called me and said Macron asked him to call me to lay off. I mean, so to me, it's perception is everything to a politician. And this just is, I mean, what I'm trying to say is she could be a woman. I mean, let's take it. We assume she's a woman. She could be a woman, but the embarrassment of this battle for them is more. Because if Candace believes this, it's perception versus reality. I mean, I don't know how to. What I'm trying to say is, I can see a jury aligning with Candace once she lays out the facts.
Yeah, yeah.
Meaning, wow, Candace really thought she's a woman, but Candace has all this information, you know, not guilty because she really believed she was a woman.
Well,
I mean, a man.
Well, look, who's next? Michelle Obama?
we called to the stand, Mike. I mean, Michelle Obama.
I mean, Barack Obama.
They wouldn't sue. You know, Obama's smart. In fact, they're too busy with their divorce. Their pending divorce coming.
Well, William, I mean, I will say that I had not heard of the story, and it's at least 2 days old, right? On top of the Candace Owens podcast, which started months ago, and you're talking. Macron called Trump back in February. I had not heard of any of this story until I saw it in your notes, and we're going to talk about it today. So if this becomes a trial and it becomes, I mean, this is going to elevate it to first or second page in the newspaper, and everyone will know. So I agree with Randy. Like, do they really want to go through all that embarrassment for what gain? Yeah. To convince the 3 million people that listen to Candace Owens?
Yeah, but if you...
What's
the think here? About it, maybe Candace Owens would do one of those GoFundMe pages.
And maybe that girl's done very well for herself, but you're right. It irks me at these people who put a criminal, triple murder, oh, GoFundMe, they get $5 million.
Maybe she'll do that.
And I used to be a Candace Owens fan, and she just – I'm not saying she's anti-Semite, but the way she talks about Israel and Jews, if she's not an anti-Semite, she's – on that borderline. Yeah. And I say that about Tucker now too. And Dave Smith, it's like the hatred to, I have my issues with the Jewish nation Israel going back to the USS Liberty incident to how they stole our nuclear. So I view them as our greatest ally in the Middle East, but I don't, you know, I'm not on my knees for them. But the way I've seen this Jewish hatred over the last 4 years, 5 years, it's kind of scary to me. I got to say that. How I see some on the extreme far right, like Daryl Martyrmaid, you know, how they're propping Hitler up, you know, and then they spew this nonsense. When you look at the history books, that's not what happened. It's like they're creating this revisionist history. So I used to be a Candace Tucker fan, and I preface this to say, it's not that I'm not a fan of Israel. It's just I view them as what they are, our allies. You know, they give us the best system. So there's a lot of, I think, guys, before we close it out, just a final thought on this. I think social media, computers, and I speak from firsthand. I was in my office with my business. I stepped out. All my kids working for me were mid-20s. And they're all on their room, you know, their phones and all that. And I'm not saying this to brag or anything, but I was a sailor. I traveled the world. I had my fill of beer, women, different cultures, different foods, all of it. And I looked at these kids. I'm like, oh, my God, we are bleeped. Because I realized these guys, 25, 26, or 7, a couple of them had never gone on a date before. They lived their lives through the freaking phone. And I'm wondering, has that exponentially grown to where these blocks of hate, this is just the beginning of the hate that we're seeing. Am I looking at, I hope I'm wrong. Please tell me I'm wrong. Gee.
I mean, hate's been around forever, right? Even before we had phones and tablets, and I'm talking the stone tablets that the Sumerians wrote on. I mean, hate goes back, you know, people killing each other over, you know, giving, meat to sacrifice, you know. So, no, I don't think anything's changed. People are going to be the same, you know, today, tomorrow, yesterday. So, but yeah, that's my thought.
Randy.
Yeah. I mean, look, you know, people, and I've heard things about AI now too. Put this generation together with AI where, you know, where it's garbage in, garbage out a lot of times, you know.
Right. It is.
You know, was it ChatGPT? There was a survey done recently, and where ChatGPT agreed with Hitler that the Jews were, you know.
No, it was Grok. It was Grok.
Oh, Grok. Yeah. I'm sorry. Yeah. But I mean, if you think about it, though, you know, I like you said, you know, we got kicked out of the house when we were 17.
Yes, I did too.
And, you know, we got kicked out, and it's like you're on your own. You know, go out and see the world, or you know, fail. But you know, I think some of this is the new world. But I'm very concerned. I think the last 4 years, especially 2020, with the presidential administration and with how the commies and the transgenders took over, the speed with which they convinced people that it was okay to tear down monuments.
Well, that's what I'm talking about. It seems like social media is like a breeding ground for this much faster. All right. Okay, guys. And real quick, it triggered my memory. It triggered me. If you have Hulu, right now you can catch History of the World Part 1 with Mel Brooks. And the reason that triggered my memory was Mel Brooks comes down as a little preview as Moses with three tablets. I bring you these 15, one drops a brick, these 10 commandments, you know, So with that, my friends, first of all, thank you, Randy, for coming on. Thank you to the G-Man. Before I go, don't forget the bookmark, grumblingsmedia.com. Grumblingsmedia.com. You'll find this podcast, our libertarian podcast, my culture call podcast, my sports podcast. We have straight place sports podcast, meaning no politics, just football and basketball, all at grumblingsmedia.com. Follow us as well on YouTube, Rumble, Apple, and Spotify under the handle Grumblings Media. So, my friends, stay fired up and challenge those who would sit there and have us look and work against our American values. And until next week, thank you to my guests. I am William Del Pilar, and this has been Fired Up.